Coming back there from the sounds of that, obviously being a little bit of a mellow tune. Following on from the other mellow tune that just played before it, you heard the sounds of Aaron Fraser with the song Dime featuring Kanka Musa. And before that, it was a little bit of the Arctic Monkeys with their own song 4 out of 5 that you heard in terms of introducing us to this morning's edition of My Sunday Morning Take, which is the every Sunday morning or early Sunday morning session that we always have here on your number one talk radio station, where you'll be in my company from 5 a.m. up until 7. This is also the particular indication, obviously, where you should have obviously, when you woken up, pulled your coffee closer and obviously have had a little bit of a refresher to sort of like get you into the particular motions as we start off our day. You here in our company with Eagle FM, and secondly, me bringing you the insightful discussions as we always do on our Sunday morning sessions. Now, before we actually start off with our particular program or our menu for today, do remember, dear listeners, you can always listen to us on your favorite platforms. This can either be through the Eagle FM application, which is free to download on either of the Android or Apple Play or Apple platforms. Secondly, there's always, depending on your data package or ultimately your data, subscription, in terms of listening to us through the Eagle FM website, just remember you have to Google search Eagle FM Namibia. You go through there and you can listen to us. Basically on a lovely digital platform or version of the particular conversation. And finally, if you wish to consult where you find yourself in terms of the frequency discussion, we always have our frequency map on our socials as well as also in the Village ePaper platform. Just consult that. Have a look where you find yourself and tune in to your favorite particular conversations as well as also programming. Starting off on what we always do here on my Sunday morning take, which is take a look at everything history, everything geography, a little bit of science, and a little bit of everything else in between. We do factor in a rather interesting conversation for today. The factoring in of it is obviously that it's based off a sport. However, it has been a technology that has been with us, humanity, for almost 200 years. You're guessing what I'm talking about? Well, here's the sort of like very lovely part of it. The Tour de France is currently taking place, and that's in its own right almost also, pretty old itself, because it's about 120 years old. And the lovely particular thing about the Tour de France is that it is known as one of the world's most demanding sports competitions in the world. Now, it's cited as the world's most prestigious and most difficult bicycle race. If you just look at it as a bicycle race, it is cited as the most difficult. And of the three foremost races, which is the other two, is the Giro d'Italia and the Vuelta a España, the Tour de France attracts the world's best riders. The same too also for those other two particular competitions. Now, it is staged for 3 weeks each in each July every year, obviously with the exception of the COVID period, usually in some 20-day-long stages. And the tour typically comprises of about 20 professional teams of 9 male riders each and covers about 3,600 kilometers, mainly in France, with occasional and brief visits to other countries such as Belgium, Italy, Germany, and Spain. Some of the particular sort of like, they call them like special stages in the Tour de France scenario. And these special stages are usually the ones that you would see hosted in the other countries, the neighboring countries around France, except for the UK. Now, if you take a look at this particular subject matter, you would obviously try and understand now, Dwight, where is the technology? Where is this almost 200-year-old technology that's been with us humanity, for so long, if you're talking about the Tour de France? The lovely thing is that specifically the technology that I'm citing is literally the technology that is the basis for these particular professional competitions and races across the world, which is also the basis for many of these particular sort of like developments, even that you would see here in Namibia. It is the bicycle. Now, as cited, obviously starting off with an extreme, the extreme side, the extreme obviously being that of the mention of the Tour de France in itself, but the Tour de France in itself, the Giro d'Italia and the Vuelta a España are symbolically a indicator of human endurance. So if we're talking about human endurance, many people would go and cite the famous Kenyan marathon runners. Every year or every Olympics, they show up and then they prove year in or competition in, competition out in terms of their particular dominance. If you look at any of the particular international marathons that happen between January every year and November every year. The reason why I say between January and November, because I've not seen any marathon races, international ones, take place in a December period. The ones that I know that do take place between January to November are the Berlin Marathon, the Tokyo Marathon. You've got a whole bunch of the South African ones, which is obviously the Comrades Marathon, and the other one is the particular, what's the one in Cape Town's name, that recently took place. The one that I also spoke about in terms of its particular, value, its particular, what the message it stands for, and, you know, how large that particular endurance race has lasted. But for once, our discussion is not based upon the actual sport itself, but rather upon the technology associated with the sport. Now, the technology associated with the sport is the bicycle. The bicycle forms part of the most crucial element in terms of, you know, basic human mobility, basic human movement. Back in this past week of, this Monday, the 14th to the 18th, obviously this past week that passed, on the home run, we had a discussion of urban mobility, which was the urban mobility based upon the urban mobility conference that the city of Windhoek hosted this week, the week before. And at the heart of that particular discussion, the national transport policy of Namibia actually pops up, the one of 2018 to 2035. When that policy pops up, there's a lovely little chapter in chapter 3, which speaks about overall, you know, transportation scenario. It breaks up the other transportation modes, but it focuses on one specifically, trying to reimagine how Namibians need to be able to move, not just between urban areas, meaning between two urban settlements, but rather with also within an urban settlement, in terms of identifying what are some of the key particular takeaways for the improvement, as well as also for the longevity and long-term sustainable presence of modes of transport. And every time when you break down modes of transport, you get to the most important and basic mode of transport that actually has stood the test of time, and that's being the bicycle. Now, as cited, obviously, in terms of the sports event that laid the foundation for the introduction of our discussion, the important thing here is that you need to look at, when you look at the creation, invention, and the likes of the bicycle, it is usually viewed as, you know, some sort of a luxury in some cases, some sort of a necessity in other cases. And in most cases, it's viewed as, you know what, there's nothing prestigious about this particular technology. But the importance of the bicycle itself is that it has very basic technology associated to it. So, you obviously get, on a standard bicycle, two mounted wheels. They are mounted inline on the metal frame. So inline meaning they are literally behind each other. They're not side by side. They're not diagonally across each other. They're literally one in front of the other in a line. the bicycle frame obviously sets that particular line or actually forms that line. The other important thing is that also the generation of power is actually transmitted by a loop of a chain, which you and I know about, but we've never looked at it in terms of the power dynamic, because that is one of the particular bases or basis that the bicycle's actual, you know, simplistic but rather beautiful technology development is based upon. You can reach between 16 to 24 kilometers per hour on a bicycle. You can reach that. I watched a gentleman talk about e-bikes on YouTube once. An American that visited, he and his wife visited Amsterdam last year. And he decided to rent a e-bike. Now I know an e-bike is slightly a little bit more expensive, a little bit a step up from a conventional bicycle, which is actually the basis for our discussion, which actually the Tour de France only bases its particular race on. There's no e-bike discussions. They improve on other things, meaning they develop new technologies around the bicycles itself, but they don't bring in any e-bikes, because an e-bike is sort of like a cheat sheet, or it's sort of like a cheat that you introduce. What the gentleman, the American, cited was the aspect in terms of the convenience of riding a bicycle, for example, in Amsterdam. And I know there's a great difference between Amsterdam and Windhoek. Windhoek's biggest issue is obviously the hills, the distances that you have to ride. Third and fourth is usually a safety concern, because we have a lot of motorists who don't understand that, you know, cyclists also need to have a particular space. It's not just about painting, you know, bicycle lanes, just to let you know. It's an active involvement in terms of actually communicating that this particular technology should be given its particular space and thus also its particular support. Reason why I mention that is born from the template that I saw in Russia specifically, where on the sidewalks they have designated bicycle lanes. The bicycle lanes never cross into the realm of the road, meaning onto the road networks of the town, that being the town of Sochi. Rather, it stays on the sidewalk where the pedestrians also are. So you have a designated bicycle lane, and, you know, they let you know, the cyclists, that you're in their space, and you stay in the designated pedestrian zone. Which actually also has a different scenario based upon it. Now, bicycles, as we know, are widely used for transportation, recreation, and even sport. That's obviously where our basis began from in this morning's particular discussion. Throughout the world, bicycles are essential to moving people and goods in areas where there are few automobiles. Globally, there are twice as many bicycles as automobiles. An automobile, remember, is a car. And they outsell the automobiles 3-1. For example, in the Netherlands, Denmark, and Japan, these countries, their governments, actively promote the use of bicycles for shopping and for commuting. Now, the three countries that I mentioned just right there, they are pretty flat. But you can apply the use of bicycles in everyday life in other towns of Namibia. In every town outside of Windhoek that I've been to, Windhoek is the hilliest of the urban settlements. I've lived in Rehoboth. Rehoboth is quintessentially flat for the use of bicycles in everyday life. Okahania, I've seen Okahania. I've driven through Okahania. It's flat. I've seen Otjivorongo. I've been in Otjivorongo. It's flat. The same too for Swakop, Walvis Bay, Henties Bay, I've seen Oshakati, I've seen Ondangwa, I've seen Ongwediva, I've seen Rundu, I've seen Gobabas, I've seen Kietmans, I haven't seen Ludritz. I've seen Marintal. Each one of these major towns that I mentioned to you today are flat. They are superbly flat. They are technically beautiful for cycling. In the United States, for example, bike paths, meaning bicycle lanes, have been constructed in many parts of that country, and that the bicycles are actually encouraged by the US government as an alternative to automobiles. Now, it obviously shows to you that there is an active reintroduction of a segment, an industry, a sector based upon transportation to bring back a specific element of mobility. Now, the history of bicycles is a very interesting thing in its own right, because according to some of the literature that I've got here open in front of me, is that some of the particular historians actually disagree about the invention of the bicycle. They literally disagree because it's based upon the varying accounts, meaning the varying dates that are applied. Because there are obviously counter challenges and challenges based upon the authenticity of one particular account versus another. However, they seem to indicate that it's not just one individual that qualifies as the inventor, and that the bicycle actually evolved through the efforts of many particular inventions that came about. For example, it seems that they can trace it back all the way to one of the particular creations or inventions of the famous Italian inventor Leonardo da Vinci, who was credited with having sketched a bicycle in 1492 in his Codex Atlanticus. It's one of those particular, you know, sort of like sketchbooks that he had a lot about. The drawing was discovered to be a forgery that was added in the 1960s. Now, another was presumed a bicycle ancestor, the Velocifere, or the Celerifere of the 1790s, which was a fast horse-drawn coach that is not considered to be a predecessor of the bicycle. So as you can obviously see, the distinctions, the debates was based upon who actually first came up with the idea. Now, here's where things actually get a little bit odd, because the first known aspects of the bicycle was actually that the first time that the word bicycle, the word itself, was used was in an English print in the Daily News in 1868, so which technically shows you that why I said that this technology is almost 200 years old. And this was to describe bicycles and tricycles in the Champs-Élysées and the Bois de Boulogne. Now, the word was first used in 1847 in a French publication to describe an unidentified two-wheeled vehicle, possibly a carriage. Now, if you don't know what I'm talking about in terms of the carriages that existed back then, they were horse-drawn. So this is before the first inventions of the car was ever achieved. Now, the design of the bicycle, and remember, guys, they even indicate here that the word was written differently, meaning where you had B-I, where you've got today B-I-C-Y, the first instance in 1868 was B-Y-S-I. So even the word itself evolved into the modern day usage that we've obviously got today, because you and I know what the word cycle means. The word cycle, C-Y-C-L-E, speaks about a circular movement somewhere, right? It speaks, the first reference, the first particular inclination that you'll ever get when you hear the word cycle or cyclical, is that something is moving in a rotationary movement. There's a rotation to the movement, which is circular in many cases, in most cases, but it has a circular flow. Now, that obviously was the particular creation, invention, development of the term itself. Now, other words for bicycle included the word bike, which is one of the most obviously used words, the push bike, the pedal cycle, or the cycle. Although the bike and the cycle are used interchangeably in terms of the words that are obviously applied to refer mostly to the two types of two-wheelers, the terms still vary across the world, for example, because in India, a cycle refers only to a two-wheeler using pedal power, whereas the term bike is used to describe the two-wheeler using the internal combustion engine or electric motors as a source of motive power instead of a motorcycle or motorbike. Now, before we continue, dear listeners, we'll quickly be taking a short musical break and we'll be coming back right after that. Back there from the sounds of Sade, specifically with the song Your Love is King. Before that, you had a little bit of Simply Red. Almost forgot Simply Red's name. That would have been, you know, almost complete sacrilege in that scenario. But nonetheless, obviously, bringing us about 15 minutes out from the top of the hour, just before 6. Wes, you're still here in my company. Here on my Sunday morning take, obviously, where we take a look at everything history, everything geography, a little bit of science, and a little bit of everything else in between, as we welcome your particular early morning session, that being obviously your Sunday morning sessions, here on your number one talk radio station, that being Eagle FM. So, just before the break, we touched on the notion in terms of where the term, the word, and probably the invention itself actually stemmed from, or who actually is responsible for said particular creation or invention. But there's give or take. The best cited sources, the best cited particular early creators actually was about the 1817, yes, 1817, or probably a little bit earlier. Because that also still has to be proven, because it seems that the one sort of like trying to accredit it to Leonardo da Vinci was a little bit of a forgery in itself. So, you know, citing the particular actual applications, developments in earnest, in seriousness, is based upon the 1800s and the particular developments that obviously took place there. So, guess what, and please don't laugh for this word. Guess what was one of the earliest names of the bicycle? Okay, you probably would not have guessed it, probably, because its name was actually the Dandy Horse. Yes, not to be confused with the dandelion or, you know, the flower, the dandy. I know, it makes, it sort of like takes away all aspect of masculinity from the word bicycle. But yes, one of the earliest terms was known as the dandy horse. But it's actually one of its other particular mechanical names that it also had, the bicycle, was the Dreisien or the Laufmaschine, meaning running machine. And it was one of the first human means of transport to use only two wheels in tandem. Now, and it was invented by the German baron, he was a nobleman, Karl von Dreis. That's why you got one of the words in has his surname in it. Now, it was regarded as the first bicycle, and von Dreis is also seen as the father of the bicycle, but it did not have pedals. Von Dreis introduced it to the public in Mannheim in 1817 and in Paris in 1818. Now, its rider sat on a wooden frame. It was placed on a wooden frame, supported by two inline wheels, and pushed the bicycle along with his or her feet while steering the front wheel. So the running machine, before it became the bicycle, had no pedals. So in order for you to propel yourself, the first indicator was obviously you've got to push yourself by the feet. You guys have seen that thing that children get as sometimes it's known as a tricycle, you know, but it's a small little tricycle. Or it's that very annoying little plastic motorcycle. You guys would have seen that plastic motorcycle that toddlers get. Now imagine the same theory. Remember, with that plastic motorcycle that the toddlers get, the toddlers are technically have to learn coordination. They have to coordinate their lower limbs, their legs, and they steer themselves obviously like you would steer yourself on a bicycle. I remember with one of my nieces, actually all three of my nieces, when they used that particular creation. Then there was obviously also when my nephew came along, or my eldest nephew, not the youngest one that was recently born. And obviously, you know, the parents would come and tell you, that's not my siblings, that it's a wonderful thing that the children love or toddlers love, that, you know, that plastic motorcycle that has no pad, that has no pedals. However, I'm sorry for this, but it annoys the parents. Well, specifically if the child realizes, the toddler realizes that they can literally move anywhere. Here's one of the particular important things to understand. The impact of this running machine is that the user realizes what their own power can do, your human power can do. It propels you. You move forward. You can do this. You can do that. And then ultimately, it does give you that sense of relatively controlled speed. Now, the first mechanically propelled two-wheeled machine was probably built by a Scottish blacksmith. Now, this gentleman's name was Kirkpatrick Macmillan, and the time period was cited as 1839. Now, although the claim is disputed, Macmillan is also associated with the first recorded instance of cycling traffic offense, meaning probably that he invented his invention, and at the same time of trying to test his invention, he got a traffic fine. And this was cited in a Glasgow newspaper in 1842 that reported on an incident in which an anonymous gentleman from Dumfriesshire bestrided a velocipede, that's what they called it, of ingenious design, knocked over a little girl in Glasgow, and was fined 5 shillings, which is equivalent to about £30 today, in terms of the particular discussion. In the early 1860s, two Frenchmen by the name of Pierre Michaud and Pierre Lemont took bicycle design in a new direction by actually adding a mechanical crank drive with pedals on an enlarged front wheel, which was known as the Velocipede. If you've never seen one of the weird bicycle designs that have existed in human history, one of them is that massive bicycle design that has the massive front wheel. You almost sit 2 meters in this, 2 meters up from, you know, in terms from ground level to where you are actually sitting. And your pedals are actually on the front wheel with your, what do they call the thing? Your handlebar is also literally, you're literally sitting on the big front wheel, where obviously the modern day bicycle is you sitting, the bicycle frame has a more stable design, and technically your weight sits on the back wheel. Yeah, your weight does sit on the back wheel because it puts pressure on the rear wheel. Hence the reason why you also sometimes, well, depending obviously on your weight, no one can take that away from you. You sometimes also struggle with the amount of power that you need to technically get going, because that just points towards your own weight discussion. Don't worry, guys. I'm not here to throw shade. Just in preparation for today's program, I technically realized the science behind why sometimes some of us struggle to cycle. We remember how to cycle. We've got the muscle memory, but your legs are struggling to develop the necessary power dynamic to keep going. And thus, you sit with a little bit of a conundrum. Reason being, you are cycling and you forgot how to cycle when you now start to try and cycle. So, this was the first particular instances in mass production of this particular mode of transport. Another French inventor named Douglas Grasso had a failed prototype of Pierre Lamont's bicycle several years before that, before Lamont's design. Several inventions followed using rear wheel drive, which is what we have today, because the best known being the rod-driven velocipede by the Scotsman Thomas McCall in 1869. And in the same year, bicycle wheels with wire spokes were patented by a Eugene Meyer of Paris. Now, the French velocipede, made of iron and wood, developed into the penny farthing, which is historically known as the ordinary spoked the ordinary bicycle, since there was no other kind in that scenario. Now, it also featured a tubular steel frame on which were mounted wire-spoked wheels with solid rubber tires. These bicycles were difficult to ride due to their high seats. That's the one that I mentioned, the penny farthing, at the start of our discussion, because you literally sit very high. They were difficult to ride because of that high front wheel, which technically was highly impractical. I mean, even in a modern day scenario, it is a highly impractical thing to try and operate. I don't know why whoever that creator was or inventor, even if it is this Frenchman, Eugene Meyer, or some of the other particular people, I mean, it's just an impractical thing to ride. Even the unicycle, if you guys know what the unicycle is, it's that one wheel, bicycle. The one-wheeler with the seat just above the wheel. That thing is also just as impractical. Because it's based, you invest so many energy in just balancing yourself. You invest so many energy in, firstly, you've got to have a low center of gravity. That meaning that depending on how your weight distribution is positioned on that one wheel with the pedals, with the seat, because obviously that's where the perception of most of your weight distribution will be placed, is literally on that seat. For you to move forward is another particular thing. Whereas when you look at the conventional bicycle frame today, your weight distribution is more controlled. Hence the reason why you've got the steering wheels, and through the steering wheels, you technically assist in that weight distribution scenario. in terms of how you sit, how strong you are, your legs are, and technically the speed that you can generate. Now, as mentioned about the particular massive tubular steel frame on which were mounted wire spoke wheels with solid rubber tires, as the particular penny farthing versions of the bicycle was that these bicycles were difficult to ride due to the high seat and the poor weight distribution scenario. In 1868, Rowley Turner, a sales agent of the Coventry Sewing Machine Company, which soon became the Coventry Machinists Company, brought a Michaux cycle to Coventry, England. Now, his uncle, Josiah Turner, and a business partner, James Starley, used this as a basis for the Coventry model in what became Britain's first cycle factory. Now, the Dwarf Ordinary addressed some of these faults by reducing the front wheel diameter and setting the seat further back on the frame. So you can obviously see where your modern bicycle frame actually comes from. This in turn actually required gearing, affected in a variety of ways, and ultimately to efficiently use pedal power. Now, having to both pedal and steer via the front wheel remained a major problem for the inventors of the modern or the earlier versions of the bicycle. Why did it remain a problem? Well, specifically that you had to find the best. It was a balance specifically how you get to the handlebar and where the seat has to sit, as well as also what is the best, if you guys have never seen bicycle frames or never looked at bicycle frames in earnest, you have to identify what is the best frame to have. In firstly, to have your handlebar at the front and where your seat sits. One of the biggest takeaways that you will always see in bicycle design is there should always be a handlebar and there should always be a seat. Always. Now, the in-between is the big conundrum, because the in-between is literally where you get things like the general frame of the bicycle, which is literally the support structure of the rest of the bicycle's components. Reason being, if you've ever looked at the mountain bikes and they've got that standard triangular shape, the frame, which is, you know, here in the middle in front of you, if you're now sitting, imagine you're sitting on a bicycle. They've got that frame thing here in front of you. That is standard in most bicycles. And then you get some of the weird bicycle designs that sometimes it makes it look a little bit weird, because here's one of the things. Something like a bicycle is not supposed to have a gender. But you actually do get women's bicycles. Women's bicycles have a lower frame, or there's a little bit of a, how can I call it? A little bit of a curve to the frame itself. I remember, what was it? My mother herself had a bicycle, which was a wonderful bicycle to ride. Your posture in terms of how you sat, your back was up straight. The handlebars were also pretty, you know, curved in terms of how you could hold them. And you could see this was a bicycle meant for, you know, a woman to sit up straight and to cycle with comfort. Now, obviously, where we stay, the street was not your best of friend, because it's not a flat street. There was a hill to the left. There was a hill to the right. Yeah, unfortunately, guys. It's a little bit of a nightmare cycling in the neighborhood where I stay. So the downside of the bicycle's design was that you could never lean forward. You could never, like sometimes what cyclists have to do, in order to generate more power when more resistance from the surface that you're riding on actually is created. So what resistance am I talking about? The moment you encounter a hill, that's your resistance. You have to now generate more power, because obviously you cannot come with the same power allocation as you were when you were in a more relaxed position or posture on the bicycle, and thus you were cycling, and thus as you were about to engage that hill, you think that you can maintain the same posture and energy input from your legs. No. You technically, when you see that hill, which is the same thing that you do when you're on a motorcycle, which is the same thing that you do when you're in your car, is literally you have to approach that hill with more speed, more power. Well, ultimately, you want to get there as quick as possible, and you also want to achieve it with as less resistance as possible that you would like to encounter. That's why sometimes you get while driving in a car, you're sometimes encouraged, if you're starting from a standing position, you engage in a lower gear or you stick to your lower gears to take on the hill. If you were already in motion and you're going to engage with that hill, you try to engage the hill with more speed. And if that hill is just a little bit too long, you shift the gear down to maintain level of engagement or level of sustained power output in order to overcome the hill and reach the top. That is the same particular thinking in applying the energy input or necessary discussion when it comes to taking on a hill with a bicycle. So certain bicycle designs make it a little bit impractical, for example, in a Windhoek scenario. Because Windhoek has so many hills, so many ups and downs. The distances in Windhoek is not the issue, dear listeners. It is the ups and downs. Windhoek has also very lovely long straight lines in terms of road. But it's that up and down. If you had to take Robert Mugabe from one end to another end, and you're cycling on Robert Mugabe, the avenue itself. I'm not talking about the man, please guys. If you're cycling on Robert Mugabe, the beautiful part of Robert Mugabe is literally here from Namra's head office, where John Maynard and Robert Mugabe cross that four-way intersection. And if you're coming from, Kleine Cooper, where the private school, Windhoek Gymnasium is, if you're coming from that end of Robert Mugabe up until where you almost reach, the four-way of, Loro Kabila and, Robert Mugabe here at the State House, one of the State House, intersections. Those two parts are the only two parts that are beautiful about Robert Mugabe. The nightmares are literally from that Laurent Kabila, Robert Mugabe intersection all the way to the National Theatre, National Art Gallery / Namra four-way intersection, which is John Maynard and Robert Mugabe. That is the nightmare section. Because you can see all the hills. Up and down and up and down and up and down. However, we're not here about bicycle racing. We're here about the aspect of the weight distribution, the logic, the rationale behind the early inventions of this bicycle. So, the important thing, as pointed out, was in terms of identifying where does the seat go and the best and perfect design of the frame. You've got the wheels. You know that there should be pedals. You know that there should be a chain associated to the back wheel. However, what is the best design of the bicycle going to be? Now, obviously where I mentioned, that the discussion by the Englishman, Rowley Turner, obviously was sort of like the introduction in terms of potentially what could be the modern day design that we see today. Now, obviously of trying to, reducing the diameter of the front wheel, meaning the size of it from penny farthing, and setting the seat a little bit back, meaning moving it from the front seat or from the front wheel a little bit back, meaning you now needed a more stable frame. The particular developments obviously meant that you needed something known as gears. which obviously provided its own impacts in a variety of ways. Because to efficiently use pedal power, you probably would need gears. Now, having to both pedal and steer via the front wheel remained one of the biggest problems for the English inventors or the British inventors. So, J.K. Starling, who is the nephew of the James Starley, partners of that bicycle company, a J.H. Lawson and a Shergold, solved this particular problem by introducing the chain drive, which is literally originated by the unsuccessful bicyclette of another Englishman's invention, Henry Lawson. Now, this meant that they had to connect the frame-mounted cranks to the front wheel. These models were known as safety bicycles. These particular safety bicycles obviously... And it looked weird, man. Because it had a U shape in the in one part of the frame. It also had an S shape at the bottom part of the frame. And there was a little bit of a weird scenario, because obviously if you guys think about the modern bicycle now, they have a shock absorber somewhere. In the standard design of the mountain bike now, the shock absorber is on the front wheel. Other bicycles sometimes had a combination of the shock absorbers. So guys, remember, these guys did not have shock absorbers 150 years ago. This was all that your arms and shoulders, knees, lower back, and ankles had to absorb all the shock as you were obviously cycling. The wheel was thinner. But yeah, this was some of the earliest versions of the thing. Now, this model, the safety bicycle, is literally a design of what you could envisage of the earliest designs of the modern day bicycle. Because it literally looks like a modern day bicycle, but you can literally see it's not a modern day bicycle. Now, these models, as mentioned, were known as the safety bicycles. They had dwarf safeties, or they were also known as upright bicycles, for their lower seat height and better weight distribution. Although without pneumatic tires, the ride of the smaller wheeled bicycle would be much rougher. Yeah, from the picture I just had, it was rough. Because it was just bad. That the larger wheeled variety actually provided. Because there's a notion of resistance absorption that has to take place somewhere. And somewhere, the resistance, or not the resistance, I'd like to call it sort of like the shock absorption of the ride, has to be contained somewhere. If you guys don't know, it's one of the reasons why shock absorbers were invented, to look after the chassis of a car and stuff like that. Starley's 1885, the Rover, which was another particular version, that obviously was created, which was manufactured in Coventry, is usually described as the first recognizably modern bicycle. Soon, the seat tube was added, which created the modern bicycle's double triangle diamond frame. It's that triangle that you see in the modern frame. Further innovations also increased comfort and ushered in a new second bicycle craze, because the second bicycle craze obviously meant that new designs came along. And I mean, one of the particular images that I've got here in front of me actually shows this and indicates this, how this all looked like. They even brought in, lovely little mud guards, or sort of like mud. Yeah. You call it a mud guard when it comes to a car. And that's literally the thing that I'm looking at here, which I can instantaneously see. That instinctive, shock absorption is technically placed under the seat, under the seat. But that was also the thing with the back pedal bicycles that I grew up with. The seats had the shock absorption mechanism. So you were grounded on the seat, on the seat of the bicycle, but rather your hands were, you know, were busy steering much of the direction that you wished to achieve. So with the introduction of the second bicycle craze in the 1890s, the golden age of bicycles actually kicks off. So in 1888, a Scotsman by the name of John Boyd Dunlop, which probably could be the creator of the modern day tire company, introduced the first practical pneumatic tire. Yes, it technically is the creator of the tire company, which soon became universal. Willie Hume was an Irish cyclist. He demonstrated the supremacy of John Boyd Dunlop's newly invented pneumatic tires in 1889. He demonstrated this particular design of the Dunlop tire in 1889, winning the tire's first ever races in Ireland and then in England. Soon after, the rear freewheel was developed. A freewheel is a discussion that is born in mechanical or automotive engineering. Why? Because a freewheel or an overrunning clutch is a device in a transmission that it disengages the drive shaft from the driven shaft when the driven shaft rotates faster than the drive shaft. An overdrive is sometimes mistakenly called a freewheel. So the rear freewheel was developed. That's sometimes what happens when you stop cycling. You guys know what happens. And then you just go with your momentum, enabling the rider to coast. You guys know what that happens. It's instantaneously when you just position your feet on the pedal and you stop the pedal from technically moving, because you now realize that you've achieved a lot of momentum. You've generated a lot of momentum. And this usually happens downhill. For safety purposes, you don't want to go faster. You want to stay in a controlled, in a speed range. And thus, you just coast. Now, this refinement led to the 1890s invention of coaster brakes. Now, you also got another particular invention known as the derailleur gear, which was a variable ratio bicycle gearing system consisting of a chain, multiple sprockets of different size, and a mechanism to move the chain from one sprocket to another. This also led to the hand-operated Bowden cable, the Bowden cable pull brakes, which were also developed during this particular period of time between the 1880s and the 1890s, but they were only slowly adopted by casual riders. You then had the Sveya velocipede. The Sveya velocipede was a Swedish design. And it was an early bicycle type that was invented, also in the same period by the Swedish brothers, Fredrik Lundström and Birger Lundström, which had a vertical pedal arrangement and locking hubs, and was introduced in 1892 by these two brothers. Now, it attracted attention at the World Fair. Now, if you don't know what the World Fair was, it was back then, it was an elaborate get-together. Like what we now call expos and trade exhibitions, for example. It literally was an elaborate, similar thing, a fair about where the latest creations and inventions would show up. Not this thing where you now have formal companies and businesses show up and then they come and show what they've already got, which you can already look at when they have their shop distribution points. The World Fair, literally, at what it looked like back in the 19th century, was that creators and inventors would come and show creations, what they created. And the world would go like, this is what you invented. And this is what you created. So, the World Fair obviously meant that, a lot of particular creators and inventors around the bicycle, put some aspect of impetus into various discussions, and their design, helped produce in a few thousand units. So by the 1870s, many cycling clubs had actually flourished. So you could literally see that this thing was bought a lot. They were popular in a time when there were no cars on the market, and the principal mode of transportation was actually horse-drawn carriages or vehicles. Among the earliest clubs was the Bicycle Touring Club, which has operated since 1878. And by the turn of the century, cycling clubs flourished on both sides of the Atlantic, and touring and racing became widely popular. The Raleigh Bicycle Company was founded in Nottingham. If you don't know who I'm talking about, the most famous, well, not famous, rather, should I rather say, most obvious bicycle name that you would find in Namibia is this bicycle, a Raleigh. The Raleigh, which comes from Nottingham in England, it was created or established in 1888, and it became the biggest bicycle manufacturing company in the world, making over 2 million bicycles per year. Now, before we continue, dear listeners, we're going to take a short musical break, and after that, we're going to come back and head into the rest of this morning's discussion here in Number One Talk Radio Station. This is my Sunday morning take, and yes, we're having a blast with bicycles. We'll be back right after this.
Thank you. know it's been a while and everything's changed. I lost my vision, but I'm coming of age now. Well, at some stage I change my mind over a bottle of cheap wine. I'll fix myself up when the moment's right. Just not tonight. Say a prayer into my drink. I think about you more than I should. Would I fade into the solar system if I left my neighborhood? Stay now. I was looking for a real soft ending. Hey now. All I wanted was some understanding. Cause I don't wanna work the room tonight. I just wanna be by your side. When it all unfolds. When it all unfolds. Know that we weren't always on the same page. Well, I guess the truth is I was bruised in the first place. From the first day. If I let down my guard now. Well, I don't wanna get my hopes up. Every time I get too close, I'm trying to shape my tunnel vision. Cause I think about you more than I should. Fade into the solar system if I could. If I could. Stay now. I was looking for a real soft landing. Hey now. All I wanted was some understanding. Cause I don't wanna work the room tonight. I just wanna be by your side. When it all unfolds. When it all unfolds. Say a prayer into my drink. I think about you more than I should. Would I fade into the solar system if I left my neighborhood? I think about you more than I should.
When she looked me in the eye, said you fancy a gunfight, come and meet me outside. She walks like an angel, she's the devil in white. I can only follow when I should run for my life. In my heart, always it was her in the dark, cause it's true. And I don't wanna let her know. I know how the story goes. It's written on the wall. I've seen it all before. The hunger when she calls. My heart won't understand why there's bloodstains on my hands. She's a stone cold killer.
I borrow just to hide from the light? I'm lost in this battle, I'm out of my mind. It was all I could save for, just to keep me alive. I'm drowning my sorrows, cause she's soon out of sight. In my heart, always it was her in the dark, cause it's true. I fall hard, and I don't let her know. I know how the story goes.
Coming back there from the sounds specifically of St. Raymond with the song Stone Cold Killer, you had a little bit of his other song as well, Soft Landing. And before that, it was the sounds of Rodrigo Amarante with the song. That just sort of like highlights in terms of our, you know, entertainment value for this morning's session. Now, getting back to where we left off with this morning's particular discussion here on my Sunday morning take, we got into an aspect in terms of highlighting all the particular inventions, creations, insights, further inventions, creations, you know, improvements on the designs, functionalities of the earliest forms of the bicycle. Now, understand, if we now look at the discussion of what was produced back then, remember this was in a period where horse-drawn carriages and transport was predominantly horse-drawn, was in the focus, and the bicycle just came in and, you know, complemented all of this primarily. Bicycle and horse buggies, which was the smaller version of the carriage, were the two mainstays of private transportation prior to the car. And the grading of smooth roads in the late 19th century was stimulated by the widespread advertising, production, and use of these two devices. Because the creators and inventors realized, and they spoke to the local authorities back then, hey, develop a smoother transportation surface for the modes of transport to literally operate on. More than 1 billion bicycles had been manufactured worldwide, and as of the 21st century, bicycles are still the most common vehicle of any kind in the world, and the most numerous model of any kind of the vehicle, whether human-powered or motor vehicle, is the Chinese Flying Pigeon. Yes, that's literally the bicycle's name. The version of the Chinese bicycle is the Chinese Flying Pigeon, which exceeds numbers of 500 million that were manufactured. The next most famous or numerous vehicle is the Honda Super Cub motorcycle. Yes, it's the Honda Super Cub is something that I also personally want, but it's not sold in Africa. Literally, it's not even sold in South Africa. It's not meant for the African market. The Honda Super Cub motorcycle, is so famous. The thing is literally, what do they call that thing? It's literally kept in a heritage museum somewhere in Japan. Okay. Each of the major corporations, the technology corporations in Japan, have their own, museums about the creations and versions of the products, that they've created and sold across the world. And the Super Cub, it's a wonderful motorcycle, features as one of them, specifically in Honda's own particular museum. The aspect of this is that, as I mentioned, the Flying Pigeon's bicycle by, the Chinese Flying Pigeon bicycle, and it literally comes from the bicycle company based in Tianjin, produced 500 million. The most numerous vehicle that was produced in the world was the Honda Super Cub, with more than 100 million units that were made. While the most produced car, the Toyota Corolla, has reached 44 million units and still counting. Now, obviously, you should see the value proposition I'm placing here. Number one and number two of the most produced transport modes are both two-wheel options. One, both I actually like. I don't like the sweating part, however, of the bicycle. Technically, guys, I would take even an e-bike over cycling. I would take an e-bike over cycling because today, if you're a professional, you know, you're someone with a job, you don't want to show up there with your armpits stinging of sweat. Or you busy, you know, becoming a personal aroma brand for, you know, the We Are Sweat Club. No, you'd like to show up to work specifically still within a reasonable amount of freshness that you just walked out of a shower, or, you know, you just indicate to your colleagues or whoever that you at least looked after personal hygiene before you rocked up at work. And that's one of the first things that actually deters me from actually trying to get into the cycling thing, because I don't want the perspiration element of the activity, which is critical and essential literally to the discussion. Now, I've cited before on the home run that there's a guy that I know from previous work experience that doesn't live far from our studio here in Windhoek, that literally uses an e-bike. And he has to cycle from, mind you, he has to cycle from Klein Windhoek to La France in Northern Industrial. From Klein Windhoek to La France. And I asked him, dude, how does this work? He says, it's magnificent, Dwight, using an e-bike. And he uses an e-bike. He says, when you reach a hill, you engage the battery. The moment you reach the top of that hill, you disengage the battery and then you just use your own leg power from there. I was amazed. Yeah, he's in his 50s now. Is it a fitter and a turner? Well, one of those particular technical roles that he's got is someone that was educated at, one of the vocational training colleges here in Namibia. And he's realized the impact, the value that a bicycle provides. He's realized it. Now, with that particular knowledge that I'm sharing there with you, dear listeners, this obviously, you know, should indicate to you that we are looking at a particular aspect where there are certain technologies that have not died down. They have not. They have not died down. The technologies have not gone away. They've actually probably been improved on. This is the manufacturing processes, most probably. The distribution processes, most probably. But when you look at the particular aspect of transportation, and citing the recent discussion that Helmut and I had in this past week about the urban mobility scenario, it is essential. in terms of providing the best transportation aspect that ensures that people actually have the ability of movement. I'll cite you another particular sort of like innovative measure. If you guys, I know that it is technically sort of like a little bit of a contentious example to make use of, but one of the most innovative ways of policing that I've ever seen in my life was the bicycle unit that the city of Windhoek has that patrols the CBD area. They realized themselves, without us having to interview them even, they realized themselves that the CBD is a problem for a car. The CBD. The CBD is literally two streets. I think it's Mandume, it's Independence, and it's Robert Mugabe. And you obviously start from City of Windhoek's intersections on Independence, and you move downwards all the way to John Minot's, the FNB, with the Kudu statue opposite it. That particular zone is problematic for a car. So if you obviously had to do policing in that zone, you technically would negate your impact effectiveness at literally being a policing force. Just in that, what was it, kilometer? I think it's a kilometer. Yeah, it's a kilometer. In that literally that kilometer of space, you would be negated. So they realize that with a bicycle unit, you can technically be on the pavements. You can technically reach further, and you technically would have the ability of being a little bit more effective. And we've seen this. We've seen this, you know, Windhoek, if you're a Windhoek native, you've seen this yourself. You've seen the particular impact, but I've only counted that there technically are only 3 or 4 of these guys, which is a bit weird for a policing unit. It's a bit weird, but yeah. That was one of the best ways in terms of what I've seen the bicycle actually being applied. But it can actually go a little bit further. Now, citing these particular aspects, dear listeners, there's obviously various versions of the bicycle. Now, what am I talking about? Bicycles predominantly are used for transportation, commuting, and even for utility cycling, but they're also used professionally by mail carriers, paramedics, police, messengers, general delivery services. Military uses of bicycle also included, and still include communication, reconnaissance, troop movement, supply of provisions, and patrol, such as bicycle infantries and the likes. They're also used for recreational purposes predominantly, which obviously includes bicycle training or touring, mountain biking, physical fitness, and play. Bicycle sports that exist around the world is the BMX racing, track racing, Criterium. If you don't know what Criterium is, Criterium is a bicycle race that consists of several laps around a closed circuit, the length of which could be between 400 meters to 10,000 meters, meaning 10 kilometers. You've got roller racing, you've got sportives and time trials, and in many cases, they've also got major multi-stage professional events, which I've mentioned earlier, the Giro d'Italia, the Tour de France, the Vuelta a España, the Tour de Pelon, and the Volta a Portugal. They are also used for entertainment and pleasure in many ways, such as organized mass rides, artistic cycling, and freestyle BMXing. So, these are obviously some of the particular developments that stem from this particular technology that cites the improvisation. And they've actually got this balance bike. They call it a balance bicycle for children. That little thing that I spoke of a little bit earlier where I cited where my brothers had or bought for their kids that little plastic tricycle thing that you which is literally a running thing, a running tricycle, because they've got to use their own leg power or develop their own leg power. That forms part of the bicycle culture as well, because obviously you're training a child early enough to coordinate, to use leg power, the ability to navigate themselves. So it's also improvement of navigation skills and the likes. And it allows them to technically occupy themselves with an event or with an activity that's, you know, in itself a very decent particular development to make use of. So on that note, dear listeners, we're quickly going to take another short musical break. And after that, we're going to come back heading into which would be the last 20 minutes of this morning's program here on the number one talk radio station, that being Eagle FM. And this is my Sunday morning take.
I was running out of time, inspiration hard to find. Across the Rio Grande, take me to your city lights, out by the riverside. I know you understand. The pain is something down tempo, low key and rock steady. Body hitting like Kimbo. Falling for you like confetti. More whiskey and ginger. Love, I'm just a beginner. What if I stayed in the middle? Just one more night. Just one more night. I knew a girl with a diamond crown. Grew up in a border town. Took me to an empty dive. Such a pretty silhouette. Show me how to two-step. She brings me back to life. Gave me something down tempo. Low-key and rock-steady. Body hitting like Kimbo. Falling for you like confetti. More whiskey and ginger. Love, I'm just a beginner. What if I stayed in the middle? Just one more night. Just one more night. Steady, body hitting like Kimbo, falling for you like confetti. More whiskey and ginger, love I'm just a beginner. What if I stayed in the middle? Just one more night, just one more night. Play me something down tempo.
Coming back there from the sound specifically, well, before that you had a little bit of Leon Bridges with Laredo, and now it was just a little bit or a hint, taking a look specifically at Jungle with the song Dominoes, and that brings us about 10 minutes to the top of the hour at 7 a.m, which is about 10 minutes away before we end off with our discussions this morning. So, the crux of the matter based upon this mobility, transport, is that we've been sitting with a technology that has been there. Ultimately, that has been, in many cases, left somewhat, if I can call it, ignored in the broader Namibian landscape. If you're going to ask me, Dwight, what is the case that you're making specifically? Well, encourage people to cycle. That's the particular case. Obviously, cycling clubs do exist in Namibia, but that is based up of a, you know, more of a recreational perspective rather than a necessity perspective. One of the unique things, but primarily, is looking at where the imbalances are. In Namibia, the imbalances are positioned more closer to driving a car rather than basically being allowed to walk or cycle to school, to work, and wherever. These particular developments that I'm indicating to you is one born from the landscape that's obviously ahead of us. More cars, for example, in a place like Windhoek would lead to congestion. I don't know how other people feel, but I personally do not like one up between 1 to 2:30 and 4:30 to 5:30 driving. I don't like it. Or 5:30 to 6, actually. I don't like it. But there's another time as well. That's between 6:30 to 8 in the morning as well. Those three periods, the peak periods, drive time periods, are more not stressful. It's just there's a lot of people that were thinking the same way like you, being, you know, trying to drive early, or if they caught up specifically in meetings and the likes and, you know, the throes of the day in terms of work, they obviously met with, you know, other similar-minded people that decided to only drive at that specific time of day and thus get caught in the same particular throes of the day. So, decongestion would be one of the future developments that, for example, a place like the city of Windhoek would have to look at. What I mean by decongestion is decongesting the whole discussion around mobility, either encouraging Namibians or Windhoek residents to take up motorcycles or take up bicycling and thus incentivize for bicycling as well. Those particular developments, dear listeners, obviously are some of the particular insightful scenarios that obviously help us look at this. If you're trying to understand in terms of what bicycles, how do the bicycles reach the particular standards, it's obviously that a number of formal and industry standards exist for bicycle components in order to help make spare parts exchangeable and to maintain a minimum product safety. So it does have an International Organization for Standardization Special Technical Committee for Cycles. That has the scope of standardization in the field of cycles, their components and accessories, with particular reference to terminology, testing methods and requirements for performance and safety and interchangeability. The second is obviously the European Committee for Standardization, which also has a specific technical committee that defines European standards for cycles, and that they mandate states that the cycle standards shall harmonize with ISO standards in terms of manufacturing, development, and the likes of bicycles. On that note, we turn back to the music, dear listeners. That'll take us all the way up to the top of the hour at 7 a.m. and technically will lead us or introduce us basically to the end of this morning's discussion here in my Sunday morning take, this here on your number one talk radio station, Regal FM. And once again, we turn to the music.
What is love but a stranger's to feel? A sin you swallow for the rest of your life. You've been looking for someone to believe in, to love you until your eyes run dry. She lives by disillusion glow. We go where the wild blood flows. On our bodies we share the same scar. Love me wherever you are. How do you love with the faithful of rust? How do you turn up a savage tale? You've been looking for someone you can trust to love you again and again. How do you love in a house without feelings? How do you turn up a savage tale? I've been looking for someone to believe in. Love me again and again. By disillusion's glow, we go where the wild blood flows. On our bodies, we share the same score. How do you love on a night without feeling? She says, love, I hear sound, I see fury. She says, love, it's not a hostile condition. Love me, where?
Hello Namibia. The NSA is conducting the Household Income and Expenditure Main Survey from the 28th of April 2025 to the 22nd of April 2026. Our officials in NSA uniforms, IDs and branded vehicles will visit selected households in all 14 regions. Hashtag, your data matters.